These are all ways we unconsciously protect ourselves from painful emotions, yet ultimately block our own healing. I call them MADS, M-A-D-D-S. They may help in the short term, but they don't really help in the long term. They make you worse. Falling into MADS is not a personal failure. It's a human program designed to keep you safe. But often it does so at the cost of keeping you numb, keeping you away from these feelings that you have to feel to be able to heal. The MADS aren't the enemy. They're your survival tools, but surviving isn't the same as healing. And by seeing those patterns clearly, you can begin to break the cycle and heal the root cause and not just the symptom. Welcome to the Anxiety Rx Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Russell Kennedy, a medical doctor and clinical neuroscientist who suffered from crippling anxiety for many, many years and found a way to heal myself and heal, hopefully, thousands of other people, because that's my goal. That's my life's work, is to make sure that you don't have to suffer with anxiety the way that I did. And on today's episode, I'm going to talk about these five common blocks to healing anxiety that I see stopping people from getting better. And I call them MADS, M-A-D-D-S, which is medications, addictions, distractions, dissociations, and suppressions. These are the five common blocks that we have to healing anxiety. And I want to explore these each individually today and talk about how they help and how they hurt, mostly how they hurt. Now, these can be initial barriers to getting started with your healing, or they can appear as plateaus or getting stuck on your healing journey. So to explain this, I use the acronym MADS because I got through med school with acronyms, M-A-D-D-S, medication, addiction, distraction, dissociation, and suppression. And these are all ways we unconsciously protect ourselves from painful emotions, yet ultimately block our own healing. So that's what I want to talk about today, in just understanding what the role of these MADS are in the alarm anxiety cycle. So these MADS are automatic, unconscious strategies that the nervous system uses to avoid feeling, specifically feeling pain, and specifically feeling the pain of the stored alarm that we keep in our body. And these strategies are often learned really early in life, and they can feel protective. They're coping strategies, after all, but they also reinforce the disconnect between the thinking mind and the feeling body, from your adult self to your child self, and they separate your mind and your body. So the more separation, the more alarm. So they may help in the short term, but they don't really help in the long term. They make you worse. So falling into MADS is not a personal failure. It's a human program designed to keep you safe, but often it does so at the cost of keeping you from healing, keeping you numb, keeping you away from these feelings that you have to feel to be able to heal. So the first one is medication. So medication masks symptoms. It doesn't heal anybody. And psych meds can be essential and even life-saving, but they're not inherently bad. I think the issue comes up when medication is used to suppress symptoms rather than address root causes. So for chronic emotional pain, medication often stops working. And I found this in a lot of my patients. So often what I would have to do is double the dose or even triple the dose. And I'm still not healing anybody. I'm just masking their symptoms. And there's a lot of stigma around psychiatric meds, you know, how people shame themselves for taking them. If you had a bladder infection and I gave you an antibiotic, you don't shame yourself for that. But a lot of people will shame themselves for taking a medication of some kind. Medication has a significant amount of stigma to it because we think we should be able to handle life ourselves. And life is complicated. And especially now, there are so many things in the world now that are so stressful that people use medication to cope. It's not that they're trying to get high. Not that we're trying to get high on this medication. We're just trying to get to a normal state. And often I'm reminded by some of my alcoholic patients that would say, when I drink alcohol, I feel normal. And I think what they're saying is that the alarm has been dropped to a certain point where I can reassess myself again, where I can reconnect with myself again. And you hear about guys in the bar going, "I love you, man," when they've had too many drinks. It allows you, I think, addictions and medications and these substances, they allow us to connect to a part of ourselves that we're blocking. I think a lot of anxiety comes from blocking love for ourselves and for other people. Because when we were younger, love wasn't safe. And if love isn't safe and love is the thing that heals you from anxiety, you need to find something that will allow you to feel that connection. And sometimes, even though medications are numbing, they turn down the volume of the alarm so much that you can actually access part of yourself and be more connected to other people. So medications have their issues. There are no two ways about that. I find the SSRI, SNRI medications numb people. And for some people, they work extremely well. But I would say only about maybe 10 to 15% of people that take these medications actually get a huge benefit from them. But they're not ineffective. I see all sorts of things saying, you know, SSRIs are less effective than exercise. I don't believe that. I think there are some people that respond extremely well to medication and stay at the same dose and are fine. But in general, medication has a lot of stigma attached to it and it tends to numb us. And sometimes, you know, that's the best we can do. Sometimes there's so much trauma there that there isn't anything but medication that will bring it down. And I think that there are people like that. But I also know that there are a lot of things we can overcome without medication. And I also know that when you don't take medication and you learn how to feel your feelings, you can develop a tremendous amount of resilience and capacity in your nervous system, which is basically what we're trying to do. Medications have never healed anybody as far as mental psych meds go, but they do have a role in getting us to a place where we can be available to heal or be available for connection. Otherwise, we're in such deep alarm that there's no connection possible anyway. And my issue with antidepressants specifically was not so much when they didn't work, but when they did work. When they did work, I think people would stay on the antidepressants and they wouldn't feel anxiety or depression so much anymore, but they tell me they wouldn't feel much of anything. It's really important to understand that medication has a role. I think there's a lot of people out there going, I'm not prescribing medication anymore because I think there's a role for medication. There's no doubt. Is it overprescribed? Absolutely, without a doubt, because doctors aren't trained in other methods of mental health other than medication. I mean, psychiatrists, yes, but even psychiatry, you know, 44% of psychiatrists used to do psychotherapy back in the early 2000s. And then they checked again around 2018 and it was about 22%. So the amount of psychiatrists that are actually doing non-pharmacological therapy, and even in their psychotherapy, they had their patients on medication, is dwindling. So we are leaning very heavily on medications and they do help some people, but they also, along with all the other meds, block us from really accessing those feelings that we need to come out, that we need to process, that we need to metabolize. So medication definitely plays a role. It's overprescribed and you may not need it, but you might. The next of the MADs is addictions, which essentially is self-medication for alarm. So addictions can be seen as attempts to regulate overwhelming internal sensations, what I call alarm. Addictions tend to get worse. Addictions tend to work initially, but then ramp up. They lose their effectiveness over the course of time. And even worry can become addictive. The brain seeks certainty and the dopamine hit of worry, warnings, what is worst case scenario, we get because it makes the uncertain, worry makes the uncertain appear more certain. And when the uncertain appears more certain, we get a little dopamine hit in our brain. So worry in and of itself can become addictive, which is one of the reasons why it makes it so hard to heal, because we see worry as this kind of special friend. And as a doctor, if I'm going to help you get rid of your special friend, get rid of your worry, you're not going to look very kindly on that because worry has minimized your sense of uncertainty. And these patterns often begin in childhood as adaptive responses to chaos, uncertainty, emotional neglect. And worry becomes a way of going into your head and avoiding this pain of alarm that's in your body. So these addictions that we create temporarily give us relief from this alarm. And that's all it takes to promote itself. Because for many people, addiction, the first time they try alcohol or the first time they try drugs, is the first time they've actually connected to a part of themselves that felt safe, ironically enough. So when people indulge in alcohol and drugs, food, porn, gambling, shopping, social media, anything that creates this temporary relief, it's a form of addiction. And that addiction is exactly that. The addiction is very difficult to stop because it resolves some of that feeling of alarm. So addictions are very powerful ways that we block this sense of alarm. But addiction also takes us away from ourselves in a way, because we're not really truly ourselves when we're under the influence of a substance. But again, sometimes that substance allows people to connect with a sense of love. I know that sounds weird, but sometimes when people drink, it relaxes them enough that their alarm drops, that they can really connect with parts of themselves that they've been pushing away. Much of anxiety is basically blocking love for yourself. So when you block love for yourself, if there's only love and fear, the only thing left is fear. If you block love, the only thing left is fear. And we can become addicted to worry, and we can become addicted to the chemicals of fear as well. So this addiction really is a distraction from the pain of alarm that we feel in our body. And it works. So that's why addictions are such a powerful force in anxiety, is because they're sometimes the only thing that relieves that pain of alarm, that pain of anxiety that we have. Next up in MADS is distraction. And distraction is one of those things where if we don't feel the pain of alarm in our system, we can distract from it on some level. It's kind of like addiction, but not quite as powerful as addiction. But it can be ubiquitous. We can constantly distract, because distraction pulls us away from the body into compulsive thinking, into compulsive scrolling or compulsive doing. These things on some level blunt the sense of alarm that we feel. And again, worry is a distraction in and of itself. It's a form of control that keeps us from feeling. As we go into our heads with chronic worry and rumination, that pulls us away from this alarm that we feel in our guts, in our body. And also social media is a major tool here. It gives momentary relief, but prevents genuine reconnection with ourselves, because distraction in and of itself can be an addiction as well. So this social media compulsion that we all have, well, not all of us, but a lot of us have, that's distraction. That distracts us away from this feeling of alarm that's sitting in our body. Now, that feeling of alarm is waiting for us when we stop distracting, but it just comes right back. Like, it just comes right back. So distraction feels good in the short term, but in the long term, it fragments our inner connection more. It blocks that connection with the child in us even more, because the child is like, love me, connect with me. Why are you distracting from me? Because the child is a source of a lot of that alarm. So we distract away from the child, and then the child gets more upset because we're distracting from it, which creates more alarm, which creates more need for distraction. So it cycles on itself like all the MADS do. Next up is dissociation, which is distracting or disconnecting from the present moment and the body. When we disconnect from the present moment and the body, we're in this sense of dissociation. We're not quite present. It's a really powerful form of distraction, but it's something we've done probably since we were children. It's kind of like daydreaming away from the distress. It's mentally leaving the moment when it feels too painful. It's unconscious. We don't direct it ourselves, we go into this sense of dissociation as sort of the ultimate distraction. And it often overlaps with ADD symptoms like forgetfulness and zoning out. Dissociation is something that's very, very powerful in our brains. It's a very powerful analgesic for pain. But the pain's always waiting for you when you come back, like distraction. But it's very, very powerful. And again, this pattern of dissociation often began as a protective reflex in childhood. And going numb felt safer than just staying in the present moment in an environment that felt unsafe. So dissociation becomes a default setting, a protective shield that now blocks reconnection to our body, but it also blocks reconnection to our own healing as well. So dissociation is a very powerful unconscious strategy, and I put that in quotation marks, that the brain uses to avoid pain. And dissociation is one of the things that is really, really difficult to stop because it's so automatic. But when you draw awareness to it, when you draw awareness to reconnecting to the present moment, specifically going into your body, sensation without explanation, when you do that, you pull yourself out of distraction and out of dissociation as well. That's why sensation without explanation is such a powerful tool to use to bring yourself into the present moment and allow yourself to connect with that younger version of you and actually start to heal. The last of the MADs is suppression, which is kind of the illusion of control through repression. Men are specifically known for this. They push their feelings down. We push down emotion to stay strong or maintain stability. Now, you can do that in the short term, but if it becomes a long-term coping strategy, we're always pushing stuff down. We're never able to metabolize. And after that amount of pushing down gets to a critical mass, this is when you start getting into huge issues with depression, with big addictions, with places where you're not connected to yourself anymore because you're pushing away the child. You're pushing away the child's needs, like was probably done to you when you were a child. When you push a child away, they either go numb or they get louder. And the same thing happens with your alarm. It either goes numb for a while, which is dissociation, or goes into this place where you can't touch it because you're so used to covering it up with something that you can't access it anymore. But energy can't be created or destroyed, only changed in form. So that energy stays in you and creates a lot of physical illness. A lot of emotional illness comes from suppressing your feelings, comes from suppressing the connection that you should have to that younger version of you that's crying for your attention. So suppression is a nervous system strategy. And if you weren't allowed to express emotion safely as a child, you likely learned how to swallow them. The same thing with anger. If you push down a child's anger, you leave them defenseless because there is only love and fear. And if they're not allowed to express what they need, express, I need love. I need attention here. If you push down their anger, you leave them defenseless. So why do we use these MADs and how do they keep us stuck? Well, MADs are ego-driven strategies. There are ways the psyche tries to protect us from further pain. It's really a protective mechanism from pain we felt as a child. So the ego is kind of an overprotective mother, or I call it the ego dragon trying to protect us. It's not trying to hurt us, but it's trying to connect, trying to protect us from emotional danger. And it does that by medication, addiction, dissociation, distraction, suppression. That's the ego trying to protect us from feeling what we need to feel to actually heal. So the ego prevents us from healing in many, many ways because it promotes these MADs. But the ego has this short-term idea that it has to protect you, but it causes pain in the long run. So this alarm, this pain in the body that gets stored, it gets ignored or suppressed. And when it gets suppressed, it's got to come out somewhere. So it usually comes out as worry. We go into our heads and worry as a way of discharging that energy. It's like whack-a-mole. When you push the energy down, it's got to come out somewhere. And it comes out in worry or compulsions or addictions or distractions or associations. You see what I mean? This cycle just starts itself over and over and over again. And when we understand that the alarm is the younger self asking for attention, when it gets ignored, we need to adopt these MADs to soothe the pain of that child. And I'm saying connect with the pain directly, connect with the child directly. When you connect with the child directly and allow yourself to feel your feelings and process your feelings, easier said than done, I know, then we don't need the MADs anymore. So to break the pattern and move towards healing, we need awareness. We need awareness of these things when we're in them. We can't change what we're not aware of, and we can't change what we don't accept. We have to fully accept the fact that we take medication, the fact that we have addictions, the fact that we distract, the fact that we dissociate, the fact that we suppress. We have to embrace those things, because when we do, we have a chance to change them. You can't change anything that you don't fully accept in yourself. So this is where the ABCs come in. You know, become aware when you're doing these things, when you're medicating, distracting, suppressing, etc. Go into your body, go into your breath, return attention to your body, make that connection with your body and your younger self. Find the location of your alarm. That's where the younger version of you lives. Breathe into that. Stay with that child. Create a compassionate connection to the child. That's the C. Offer warmth and care to the younger part of you that learned those survival strategies, and show them that you are there for them. They don't need those strategies anymore. That's what I'm saying, is that the MADs are there as a poor cousin, as a support network. And when you connect with the child specifically, you don't need the MADs anymore. And the MADs aren't the enemy. They're your survival tools. We should be grateful to them. Otherwise, many of us wouldn't be here if we didn't have those tools that we use to avoid the pain. But surviving isn't the same as healing. And by seeing those patterns clearly and learning to meet your own needs and your own alarm with compassion rather than avoidance and these MADs, you can begin to break the cycle and heal the root cause and not just the symptom. So the key is, become aware of when you're medicating. Do I have to? Maybe you do at this point in time. I have nothing against medication, but it just allows you to get to a point where you can actually pay attention. One of the issues I have with medication is that people feel better. When they feel better, they feel no need to go back into their own pain. Watch, what am I addicted to? Am I addicted to social media? Am I addicted to cocaine? What is it? What are you addicted to? If you fully accept that in yourself, then you can change it. When am I distracting? Can I feel myself distracting? Can I set a little intention in my own self to feel when I'm distracting? And then do the same thing with dissociation. Although dissociation is harder, dissociation is so automatic that we fall into it so quickly. But still, awareness is the key, being able to see it first. And suppression, are you suppressing your emotion? Can you let some of that emotion out? Can you connect with that younger version of you that needs to be seen, heard, open to, understood, loved, and defended? When you do that, when you connect with the younger version of you and see them, hear them, open to them, understand them, love them, and defend them, then you can let some of these MADs go. Then you can start holistically healing from anxiety rather than using these coping strategies that just allow you to cope and just kick the anxiety can down the road. So I hope this has helped you understand the ways that we block our healing and we use these unconscious coping strategies, but they don't serve us. They don't help us in the long run. And I'll see you next time.